You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, brought to you by themortgagewarrior.com. Use home equity to reduce stress today. Call Steve at themortgagewarrior.com. It could save you thousands.
This is the home of the grit grinder.
We do have a little grit and grind when we reach in our pants and pull it out.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Mentioned 24 years ago today, our dear friend Douglas Gilmore had the pea soup night.
Do you imagine 24 years ago? This guy has had a time.
The night before the Dallas Stars were in town, he was having himself an evening.
We should have him on this week just to revisit that.
We've already talked to him. He doesn't want to talk about that again.
Yeah, Dougie seems like the kind of guy. He'll drop that knowledge once, but don't bring it up to him again.
Yeah.
Like, he was happy to supply us with story.
What was the meal? Pea soup and a tuna sandwich?
Tuna sandwich, pea soup, a nap, and then half dozen assists that night. A half dozen.
That is six so assists. Legendary.
It's the most legendary story you're ever going to hear. I'm sure there's been other great ones.
But what I'm getting at is,
I'm sure he has
that's
other
the,
great
I'm just
ones.
Saying, that's the tip of the iceberg, I think.
Well, he told us that story when he was at camp in St. Louis. Remember, he jumped out of the window to get back into the bar?
That's right.
Then circled back into the room, and the scout was still on the floor. He's like, what are you doing out of your room?
How'd you get out of your room?
Because I walked right by it. What are you talking about?
He was on the third floor, right?
Yes.
Scaled down to the second?
He was thirsty, and he wanted to get back in there, and it just didn't work out for him, and that's fine.
Tip of the iceberg, that's what I'm saying.
It's actually a big, big day in history for the Maple Leafs, because today, back in 1999, was the last game at the Maple Leaf Gardens. So it's been 18 years since they shut off the lights at the Gardens. 18 years at the ACC. And how many playoff games? We should tabulate that. Yeah, how many playoff games at the ACC?
There's been quite a few. In the 2000s, they made the playoffs every year. Yeah.
They went to the conference final that first spring in 99, lost to Buffalo.
They lost to Buffalo twice, I believe. Once to Philly, once to Carolina.
Carolina in 02. Why don't we go around the table? How many playoff games do you think have been at the ACC since it opened?
Since it opened?
And we'll have someone 14. Look it up, and we'll get you an answer later.
14.
Well, it's got to be more than that.
You said, they've made the playoffs.
Made it to the conference final.
24.
You're going to say 24? Yeah. That sounds about right.
I was going to say 21.
I'll go a bit higher, because you got to remember, against Boston, they had three games.
Yeah.
I'll say 30. I'll say 30 right on.
Yeah, you're going to – I think it's closer to 30.
30 home games at the
ACC.
I'm going
to be wrong. I'm wrong.
Even that.
Yeah.
Like, a building's been around for 18 years. 30 home games?
It's probably more.
That's not that good.
It's probably more.
All right. Well, Mullen, Steph, have the crack research team get on that. Try to find out how many home games have been played at the ACC.
Either way, you want to see more. That's the thought process and the common denominator.
Well, and you're hoping that in about 2 months that they will be adding to that list.
Yes.
But as it currently stands, they're having some issues, right? I mean, I think they're still in the second wild card. They are. They're tied in points with Philly. They got two games in hand. The Islanders are a point back. They both played 54 games. New York's in town tomorrow night.
Right.
So that has wild card implications. And Boston's won a couple of games now with a new coach, and Boston's three games up on them, but they have, I believe, four games in hand. So they're in the race, but, you know, anywhere between 22 and 24, 26 games left league-wide, and certainly in the Eastern Conference. So we're going to be able to decide this in the next 50 days. Got about 50 days, and we'll figure out how this is all going to play out.
And we're going on the road.
Well, we're hopeful if they get in. If they don't, we're sitting right here in this studio.
I know.
Let's bring in Ray. And Ray Ferraro on Overdrive is brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. Just for a sense of equality, we'll let you in on this, Ray. We were talking about how, well, it's actually a big day for you in the history of your career because back in 01, you scored your 10th hat trick in league history or in career history. That's not bad, eh, buddy? I didn't think you had 10.
Well, I'm not real sure what it says about the Buffalo Sabres that the Thrashers got 5 on them.
Yeah, you guys had some issues. Was Hasek in net?
Maybe they scored 7.
Yeah, no, we won 5-4. That was a Marty Biron special.
That was a backup night?
No, I think Marty was. No, wasn't Marty kind of their starter then? Like, I don't know.
So, yeah.
Well, was Hasek in Detroit at that point?
Yes, he was gone.
Okay, so he was out of there. So yeah, Marty would have been the guy.
Yeah, but so I'm sure there were a couple of cheesy rebounds and a deflection in there somewhere.
Well, hey, you'll take it, man.
Oh, you bet.
It's not how, it's how many. And you had 3 that night. And today also marks the 18th anniversary of the Garden's shutting the lights off. The Leafs losing to Chicago that night. I think they lost 4-2 or 5-2. And it's been 18 years at the ACC. And we were all throwing around guesses for how many home games the Leafs have played at the ACC. I said 30. Oh, you said 24, I think?
Yeah, I said 21.
Noodle said 21. You want to throw out a number? We're going to tabulate this and hopefully find out.
What do you mean how many home games have they played in 18 years?
In the playoffs. How many home playoff games at the ACC since 99?
There's a lot of zeros there. 19.
19 for Ray.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of zeros.
Well, there were a lot of years, where they didn't even have to turn the power on. There's no point.
But there was pointed out there was a year where they went to the conference final.
There were 2 years.
2 years.
That first year in the building.
That would be 8. Something like that, right?
Yeah, at least, anyway.
Yeah, 19 might be low. I'd like to rethink that, Alex.
Okay. You can circle back if you want. You want to add to it? Go ahead.
I'd like to go for 24.
Okay,
I already said that.
Well, sorry for – I didn't realize you were there. I thought you'd fallen asleep. It's the first thing you said in 5 minutes.
I am a little tired right now.
What were you doing, running or snowboarding this weekend?
Worse. I went roller skating.
Oh.
Can you imagine him crossing over in the corners?
That hopefully you had the roller skates with the 4, like the old style ones that you laced up.
Oh, that's what I had, buddy. I couldn't move. Like, I used to skate pretty good. I couldn't move.
Oh, I can't even imagine how uncomfortable that would be. Did you have a helmet on?
No. My ankles and my hips were killing after 15 minutes. And my favorite thing about the whole roller skating experiment was there was, like, the Gretzky of roller skating was out there bebopping and dancing and grooving around. And I left to get my Uber to go, and he was outside in a snowstorm with his roller skates still on, having a dart. Didn't even take the roller skates off.
That's pretty impressive.
He was awesome.
So you know he was headed to the bowling alley next, and he had one of those wrist braces on.
Oh, yeah. That's a guy who buys a season pass.
For sure.
And he's getting in there. He's paying about 25 cents a pop by the end of the year because he's in there 3-4 times a week. He's on a first-name basis.
Yeah, anything like that where I could make a total jackass out of myself where I think I could be decent at, I can't do it. I'm like, nope, I can't do it. I'll go do something that I don't have a chance at.
No, I'm with you on that. I would rather avoid it. I'd rather just hang out at home. Yeah. Then try something new. That pretty much sums up my life. That's my slogan. I'd rather just hang out at home.
Yeah.
But speaking of which, I guess the Leafs have a new slogan in the room, and the new one is now play fast, play right. And Babcock is really pushing that, and he wants the media to know about it. And I don't know, is this supposed to do anything? Do you think this is going to be motivation? What do you make of a new slogan with 28 games left to be played?
You know, I don't know when the slogan stuff started coming in, but I don't know that, like, outside of reading it once, how much I would have noticed it. Like, I'm being serious. I'm not trying to, you know, you see the stuff, you know, patience, desire, commitment, whatever, painted all over the rooms, and I don't know. I guess it reminds you, but unless the coach is reminding you all the time and you actually understand what it means, I don't know how much of a help it is. I mean, the fact that it's a way that they want to play, like they want to, he feels they've played slowly, or he feels that they've, you know, been cheating for offense, which is generally what he talks about when he says about playing the right way. So maybe that becomes a connective thing for them. Maybe that becomes part of a bigger vision for them, because they've, you know, I mean, what is that, 24 or 25 goals against in 8 games? I mean, it's not going to be good enough.
No, they're starting to leak here a little bit. Right. They're giving up way more goals.
Their inconsistencies are really starting to...
Yeah, and I think, I'm sure the internal debate, and I know this is happening with the fans, is this what the norm will be down the stretch, or is this just a funk? You know, like, can they break out of it? And if they are going to break out of it, who is responsible for breaking out of it? Is it, because it can't be 100% on Freddie Anderson to make 40 stops every night.
Right.
Right. It's got to be more than that. But you also have to be realistic. Hunwick and Pollock are not going to play like Norris candidates down the stretch either. So, you know, if you're focused on two or three guys.
The offense is generally good enough, Brian, but that D-core, it's just can't. It's just they're not good enough to do the job on a consistent basis.
But I don't think that's changing over the final
month.
It's not.
So roll the dice.
But I want to bring Ray into this too, though. Can't the forwards help the D out? Like, can't – I mean, if Tyler Bozak, JVR, some of the veteran players, Komarov, like, it's not just all on the D. I've seen a lot of forwards miss assignments – collapsing to the middle of the ice, especially in their own zone. That's not just on the D. That's on support and secondary support. Like, to me, everyone's got to play that system.
Well, what I think I notice more than anything is somewhere along the line, it's gotten really easy to get from one blue line to the other against the Leafs. Like, you can, it's like you're almost going downhill against them. So, you know, when Noodles, you talk about the forwards helping out the D, what I think happens is they've not forechecked hard enough or aggressive enough, and then they don't have enough support once the first pass is made. So it becomes one pass, two pass, you're through the neutral zone. Now you got to spin around in your zone and try and get the puck back, or, you know, stymie a cycle or shut the rush down. And it just over the course of time, if it happens 7, 8, 9 times in a half a game, you're going to get burned on it eventually. That's where I think the biggest breakdowns occur for Toronto, is that the middle of the ice has become something that is really easy for other teams to navigate.
What's your take? We were throwing around numbers earlier, obviously, on the amount of home playoff games at the ACC. I think every hockey fan is throwing around numbers on Gustav Nyquist and how many games he'll receive for his stick swinging and assault, essentially, on Jared Spurgeon over the weekend. What do you think in the league will end up doing with Nyquist?
Well, I think it's got to be 10 games. I don't know how it can't be. The BS where he says, you know, I'm trying to lift my stick over his head, he's the shortest guy in the league. Like, seriously, he's the shortest guy in the league. And if you're lifting your stick over, you don't lead it with the point of your stick. Look, he was pissed off that they never called a cross-check when he was on the ice.
Yeah,
and he got up, and I don't know. You can say, you know, what was he thinking? The answer's not much. He's not a dirty player, but it doesn't matter.
No, he temporarily lost his mind.
Yeah, and you've got to pay a hefty price. I mean, I don't know how it can be less. Like, what's the defense for it? Like, don't make the defense, oh, Brad Marchand got away with a slew foot. Who cares? It's got nothing to do with this particular instance, or that, hey, they should have called the cross check. You're right, they should have. They didn't. Doesn't excuse anything that he did.
Correct.
I was surprised they didn't kick him out. And I know the refs were in a tough spot because maybe
Brucey was losing it.
Well, I mean, that if when it's live, it's difficult, but you called the 4 minutes, so you saw it enough to be like, okay, that's clearly a penalty.
Yeah, high stick,
like,
yeah.
I got to give you a double minor for that. Like, if that's not, wow, you got to leave and leave now, I don't know what is. Because that was just so blatant, so vicious. And you just don't see that kind of stuff.
No.
You don't. You see elbows, you see hits from behind, you see, you know, stick work at the lower body, but you do not see a furious player turn around and smack someone in the face with that kind of you know, power behind it. You just don't see it. I can't recall the last time I saw it. That was that blatant. Like, it wasn't even like I'm falling, but I know what I'm doing. It was I'm stable and I'm turning around. And I'm going to crush you right in the face.
Fork you right in the face. It was gross to watch.
Yeah, it really was.
Like, I'm curious when he gets in there for the in-person hearing. I assume he's going for it. I haven't heard whether he is or isn't, but because he can waive that if he doesn't want to go. But whatever he says, wouldn't it just sound like trash?
Stupid.
You know, like, there's nothing to say. I mean, I would try to sell that I've never been suspended before, that I've never had, you know, more than 50 penalty minutes in a season or whatever the number is.
But what does it mean when he says he tried to lift the stick over his head? Is he trying to get it back to, like, slash him in the back of the legs?
Yeah, I mean, I can't even begin to, like, I guess he's saying, you know, I'm trying to get around him and my stick was tied up. And the problem is, unfortunately for these guys, is that there's video now. So
yes.
You can say whatever you want. You know, hey, I was trying to do this. Oh, you were you? Let's open the video up.
Well,
because the video shows, I think, really clearly.
I was watching. I just happened to be flipping around because I was actually watching the Raptors collapse, and it was right around the same time when the Bruins-Habs game was starting. And Shaw began the game. Torrey Krug began the game. And if you're not familiar with the incident that took place, what, about 2 months ago, I guess, 6 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Krug laid out Shaw. He didn't get suspended for it.
Nope.
I don't even think he got penalized for the hit. And Shaw was concussed, and he missed a bunch of time, and he's really had a tough time kind of getting back on track. So you got a guy who got concussed, and then in order to make up for it, they fought to start the game. It was actually a pretty good fight. And this is one of those situations where, you know, like, non-hockey fans wouldn't quite understand it. And the anti-fighting, anti-violence crowd would just be throwing up over this because some guy's making up for a hit that led to a concussion by fighting the guy who gave him a concussion. Like, isn't that the most hockey description ever?
The most bizarre scenario.
But it somehow makes sense when you're in the game.
To defend my concussion, I have to fight.
Exactly.
Yeah, to explain it to somebody that doesn't watch the game might seem a little goofy for sure, but I don't think that really becomes too much of an issue. Like, the anti-violence crowd's going to hate the anti-violence stuff anyway. I would say that this isn't a stage fight. This is more like I didn't like the way you hit me, so now you got to fight me. And I guess Krug could not fight him if he chose to do that, and you could say, okay, you didn't want to fight him. But I wasn't surprised, or I'm sure you guys weren't either, when you saw the two names that were on the fight, and you go, oh, well, I guess that kind of equals everything out.
Right.
Somehow.
Right. Yeah, no, I wasn't even thinking about the hit before it happened, and it was kind of staged because Shaw just looked at him and said, you know, it's happening at some point, and Krug said, all right, let's dance. And
Ref, or Ray, what did you think of the ref's call for the penalties?
I loved it.
So did I.
Can we hear this? It's amazing.
Yeah, it's Wes McCauley after those two got in the fight last night in Boston.
Montreal, number 47 for Boston. Both guys, 5 minutes each for fighting.
That is the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
See, you know, so I put out on Twitter, Wes McCauley's awesome. And you got a bunch of guys, he's just showboating, he's playing to the crowd. Who the hell cares? The penalties call has already been made. He made the right call. In the NFL, everybody gets, gets all excited about Ed Hockley's arms. And, you know,
I honestly,
I think
he was just excited. Like, I think he gets jacked up.
But so what? Like, isn't that kind of fun? He got the right call. It's not like he's making a spectacle of things because and he screwed up the call. Like, that's not it at all.
I loved it. I somewhere in my mind, I thought it was a little bit like Leslie Nielsen when he was the umpire in Naked Gun.
Enrico Palazzo.
Yes, he was Enrico Palazzo after he called the second strike and then did the spinorama and the splits. I want to
get the guy to do my voicemail for me. You have reached Jeff O'Neill. Leave a message.
Well, I think what's important though. And I'm with you guys. I thought it's sports, man. It's entertainment. The guy added some theater last night.
Right.
But I do think it has to be a coincidental call. If yeah. that if there's 30 seconds left in a tie game and some guy takes a dumb trip, imagine that. This guy is like, yeah. tripping, yeah. 30 seconds, what a dummy. And yeah. like it's got to be
well,
like.
He did it in the playoffs, I think, with L.A. and San Jose, where he turned around and goes, we got a good goal.
Yeah, yeah okay, but that's a goal, right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you
yeah,
if
you can't do it where half of the fan base is pissed.
Yeah, it's like, dude, just relax. Like, we know it's a dumb penalty. I don't need you throwing it in my face.
Hey, one of my favorite ones like that, you remember Mick Magoo?
Yes.
And so there was a game in Edmonton, and the Oilers scored what should have been a game-tying goal off a face-off. I was doing the game, and the puck went back to the point. The guy shot it. It went in, and Mick comes. He's in the far corner, right, you know, where the referee is on the goal line. And he comes flying out of there. He looks like he's landing an aircraft, and he's waving the goal off with a glove pass. And by the time he's finished waving the goal off, he started at the goal line. He's now past the slot. Like, it was unbelievable. It turned out the guy didn't pass it with his glove. He kicked it with his foot. And so, you really put yourself in a bad spot. Because, I mean, where are you going to go from that point? You're like, okay, well, maybe not. But so, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's for something for all the time. But, man, it was pretty awesome last night. I'm telling you, I don't know how many times you guys watched it. I bet you I watched it 15 times.
Me too.
Easily. I made it. He was, we have a thing on TH2N, who won the night. He won the night, for sure. Like, it didn't matter who else did anything else. Wes McCauley, with his call of that fight, won the night.
Well, I thought, remember that no goal call, or good goal call that O was referencing?
Yes.
So I thought that was one of the best calls ever. That's like minor league compared to this. Like, this was so much better. I loved it.
I agree.
With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, I'm sure Habs fans are happy that we're focused more on the referees' call as opposed to them losing 4-0 again last night.
Why do they stink?
They're in big trouble. And you look at the points percentage, Ottawa is actually past them because Ottawa is 6 points back, but they have 5 games in hand. So just based on the points percentage, which is a more accurate way of really looking at the standings, Montreal
still seems unrealistic to me. Like,
it does, because, you know, 6 points is a big gap, and Montreal, they've been out of the conversation the whole year. Like, they started 13-1-1, and it was like, all right, you're in. We'll go talk about everyone
you're
else.
Gone, you're gone. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, they've got a huge buffer on teams like the Leafs and Philly and other teams that are kind of in that gray area, but it's not like it was a year ago or a few years ago, but it's starting to feel like
it'd be creeping up on them.
Some panic is seeping in, doesn't it, Ray? It has to in Montreal.
Well, I don't know how it can't be, because a lot of times when something goes upside down, you can point to something and go, okay, that's the reason. You know, like, okay, they're getting really, you know, their special teams have fallen apart, or their goaltending's fallen apart. The problem in Montreal right now is you can point at anything you want, and you can go, that's a problem. Like, how are they going to get it all fixed in 4 days that they've got off here for their bye week? Carey Price has given up 3 or more goals in 13 of his last 18 starts. Like, when has that happened?
Right.
That's a debacle. Their defense, Markov gets taxed more than he should, even though they're trying to keep his minutes down. Now this week, apparently, he's heading back to Russia to pick up his kids, to bring them back to Montreal with him and his new wife. And so he's got a life upheaval going on, too. Plekanec is a shadow of what he used to be. He's like no threat at all. Galchenyuk is their one center that you can really say is a dynamic centerman. They've gotten good play out of Dano, but, he's just in his first year. Paul Byron struck early, and now he's come back to the pack. Like, where's the strength of their team now? Because right now it looks like they got holes in their lineup all over the place.
Well, you can talk about the holes in the lineups. Do you think, with the success of the teams that have fired their coaches, that that's crossing people's mind there, like, most importantly, Bergevin's?
Well, I don't know how he wouldn't at least consider it, but, him and Therrien seem to be really locked in tight together. So, but I would take a look at everything. 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't have said so. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, you know what? He's done a good job. He's managed a lineup that got decimated with injury, and and they've done a decent job. And it doesn't matter that the fans always have him on the firing lines in Montreal. They've got everybody on the firing lines all the time there. Whenever somebody goes through a 2 or 3 or 4 week blip, they say, okay, you know, we could change the coach. Well, he's never been a popular guy to start with, and for whatever the reasons might be, but they've got the guys that are fired that potentially could be candidates. You've got Kirk Muller, who's, you know, it seemed when he came to Montreal would be at least somebody they would look at in the future, you know, if they were ever going to make a coaching change. So I don't know that Therrien should consider himself, you know, or not that it matters, but not that it's going to be rock solid for him right now. I think everything right now needs to be under the microscope, because if they think they're a contender, then obviously this isn't good enough, but they've still got 3 weeks to be a contender.
Right.
You know, they still have 3 weeks to either to make a change, for something to right itself, but I don't know if you're at the point where you go, oh, we'll just wait this out, and I'm sure everything will be fine.
Well, I would think Bergevin's got to be thinking about his own security, too. I mean, this is a guy who convinced the owner that trading PK was the move. And listen, they got Shea Weber back, and Weber's had a great year, and he's having his issues right now. It's not like PK's lighting the league on fire either in Nashville. They've got their own issues down there, for sure. But that was a massive move. I mean, that was a huge, huge trade.
Right.
And we know that last year, at the end of the year, everything just collapsed on them. And if it happens again, it can't just be Therrien. Like, if you're the owner, you're evaluating everyone, including Mark Bergevin. You have to be. So even if you're so loyal to Therrien, or you don't want to come off as a guy who's listening to the fans, you know, I would think you got to look in the mirror and say, if a coaching change can save me, sorry, Mike. You know, like, it's a ruthless business, but that wouldn't shock me if that was running through his mind. Wouldn't he have to be thinking like that?
It wouldn't be the first GM to do that.
Exactly. I'm not saying it would be fair necessarily, but that's generally the way it works. Is I would guess that's what happened in St. Louis a few weeks ago. Probably in Boston too. So,
well, you know, I mean, it's funny, those two spots. The change in play from both teams is really quite noticeable. You know, they're
the Islanders too, Ray.
Right. I guess so. You know, like I'm going to make a comparison to, you know, you have in Hitchcock and Julian, you have guys that have been there a long time. Capuano had been there a long time, but Capuano was not ever thought of in the same vein as, you know, Hitch is a tough guy to play for. All of a sudden, it's a little bit of an easier place to play right now for Mike Yeo. Bruce Cassidy came in and he opened up the game a little bit. He wants the D rushing. He wants the four or the D up into the rush. He wants to be a more aggressive team. Julian's style is more defensive rooted. So, you know, Doug Weight was able to come in, and whatever was going on there, part of it is they got much better goaltending. And so now they've got a chance. So I don't know what the answer can be with a coach sometimes, but I think at times you can look and go, we could change something here and the team could be a lot different. If you change the coach in Montreal, what would they get different? Like, do they feel like they would be more aggressive? Do they feel like they would be better defensively? Like in St. Louis, they became a little bit lighter team. They became and the goalie was way better too, which helps. But Boston changed the way they played a little bit. Can Montreal do that? Does that matter if you change coaches, if the guy won't open the style up? I mean, those are things you have to consider when you're trying to decide whether you want to keep the coach.
Ray, quickly, yes guy, no guy. If you're filling out your heart ballot, would Brent Burns be on it right now?
Be on it? Yes, 100%.
Yeah. All right, buddy, we got to fly.
That's a good yes guy. Well, let me throw this number out, because we mentioned this earlier in the hour, that the Maple Leaf Gardens came to an end, essentially, or they turned out the lights on this date, 1999. Leafs take it on the Hawks. Final game of the Gardens, which meant later in the week, the Leafs opened up the Air Canada Center. They've been playing there since 1999. We've been asking, because we're just throwing it around without knowledge of the actual number, how many home playoff games have the Leafs played at the ACC? I said 30. Yeah. Noodles, you said 21,
21,
I think.
21, yeah, it was way low.
I said 40. You said 24,
said 24.
And Ray said 24. Shout out to Mike and Steph. 44 home playoff games.
There you go.
That is way more than I thought. 44 home
way
playoff
off.
Games.
Yeah.
Way off. We were way off. Samsonite. So
yeah, that was a pretty weak effort by the four of us.
Well, they played 9 in 99 that first spring, and they played 11 in 02. So there's 20 games right there going to, you know, conference finals twice over the course of 3 years.
I got to say I was overwhelmed by recent history.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's what it is.
I was thinking the same thing. All right, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Talk to you tomorrow for Islanders. So we'll see Johnny Tavares.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be interesting.
It's a big game, big wild card implication game.
Yep. See you then.
All right, buddy. Ray Ferraro on Overdrive is brought to you by Timeshare Exit Team. They'll get you out of your timeshare guaranteed or give you a complete refund with offices in Toronto or visit timeshareexitteam.ca.
A little bit of a butchering by the
Ray
Ferraro.
We got to play that.
We got to replay that for ourselves.
After the break.
I thought he was just going to stop talking and pretend
Islanders,
like his phone.
We're going to. I don't understand. Bye.
Did I ever tell you this story? I'm sure you guys know.
I thought we had to go.
We do have to go. I'll tell you this on the other side about the guy when I was still doing the Hayes show that he started like fumbling his words and he just hung up.
Let's hear Razor before we get out of here.
Talk to you tomorrow for Islanders. So we'll see John Tavares.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be interesting.
I kind of saved him. I could have let him.
Yeah, you
sit
went like, oh, yeah.
I'm really trying to help him out. I'm a charitable guy.
One more time.
Talk to you tomorrow for Islanders. So we'll see John Tavares.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be
interesting. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. We're digging deep into the archives because I don't even remember who it was. It was some guy, I think he was from Buffalo. He was on the Hayes show to talk about the Bills.
But he wasn't a regular beat writer or something?
I don't think I had ever had him on before. I wasn't. Steph was off and it was
kind of a mail-it-in.
A bit of a mail-it-in type of situation. And
felt like a blogger from.
It was one of those situations. No, he was just really, he was nervous. Which is fine.
Yes.
But he kept kind of like stumbling over his words, right?
Just chewed his tongue right off.
He was chewing his tongue off, and then it got to a point where he just hung the phone up.
Like that was
like mid-interview.
Check, please.
I'm like, so how do you expect Rex to approach the Tyrod Taylor situation? And this guy went on a rambling routine like you've never heard before, and then all of a sudden he was gone. Like it wasn't a bad connection situation because we tried calling him back and he didn't answer us. So he just completely said I'm out of here, man. I'm jumping off this ship. I'm done. I'm never doing another interview.
We should
interview
find
again.
Who that guy was.
I kind of want to. I'm really curious now because I don't remember his name, and I'd love to hear the audio because I replayed it like 15 times
on NBC
after that.
Sports now or something like.
Yeah, it's like Mike Florio or something. The guy's like a huge superstar, and we launched his career. Anyway, we're talking about how the Gardens came to a close on this date in '99, and we were throwing around how many home playoff games we think the Leafs have been playing at the ACC, and we were all way under the number. And shout out to Toronto Mike S., who tweeted in all of the numbers. Total of 44 playoff games at the ACC for the Leafs. They had 9 in 99, 6 in 2000, 5 in 01, 11 in 2002, 3 in 03, 7 in 04, and then 3 in 2013.
Wow, that's a.
So they had a good run going there for a while. I mean, from 99 through 04, they had 41 home playoff games.
But then how many in 2013? Four?
They had three.
Three.
Yeah, four in Boston and three at the ACC.
They've had three home playoff games in the last how many years?
In the last 13 years.
Wow.
13 years. Well, now, you include the lockout.
Edmonton Oilers are in that same boat.
Think about that. Right? That is just awful.
It's atrocious.
That's really embarrassing when you put it that way.
Yeah.
How many home playoff games at the ACC in the past 13 years? Three.
Think if you're a Blackhawks fan.
Three.
Think if you're a Blackhawks fan. I don't know. Can't remember. Was it the first time, second time we won the Cup? Like
they probably played, what, 70, 80 home games?
I don't know.
Over the past 10 years?
Because they were either in the Cup final or in the conference final.
Every year. And it seemed like they went game seven all the time. Like,
yeah. It's crazy.
That is really embarrassing.
You are looking at probably 70 or 80 if you're a Blackhawks fan.
Well, it's not like the Raptors had the lights on every spring either. I mean, they had some years where they were on Expedia.ca in early April.
So the ACC lights were pretty much off from April to.
If you had a concert rolling through town, the ACC was the place to be in late April.
Well, let's hope.
Let's get that
changed. Let's end. I was just going to say, let's end that streak.
Well, I mean, panic is starting to seep in for both fan bases. The Raptors, I mean, they're coming unhinged. there aren't any Leaf players that have come out and said anything outrageous. Now, I don't think any of them have the stones to do it because Babcock and Lou would have the lights turned off.
Cross-faced chicken wing.
Come on in my office and Lou Ray Jepsen would kick into high gear.
Borderline suspended by the team for comments like that.
You think?
Oh, yeah. I do not think that those comments would be.
Like if Kadri came out and said,
we need a change around here, I think he would be suspended for a game.
You think they would sit him for a game? Because, you know, like Larry was talking about Casey. I believe that.
Either they would, or he would sit his ass on the bench and he'd play 2 minutes.
Yeah.
They would not take a liking to that.
I think Nazem. I think Nazem has been really good in the media since the start of the year where they're like, Lupo's not playing. And he told me. It looks great. He's looking forward
to
playing.
He's in town. I can't wait to see him.
Ready to rock.
No, that's it.
He was like his biggest supporter.
But Nas has been, he's hockey-focused right now.
All right, how far into Austin Matthews' career before he can get away with comments like Lowry got away with? In 3 years, he can speak out?
He's a front-runner to win the Calder this year. So he's
nobody in hockey, nobody with these people running this team is going to say that in this organization forward. That's why those people are there.
Okay, but 3 to 5 years from now.
In your head.
Yeah, keep in mind, though. 3 to 5 years from now, Austin Matthews is a top, let's just say, whatever player. Top 5 to 10, or even top 3.
Mm-hmm.
And Babs is in his ear. At some point, you don't think he's going to give him the Brett Hull?
No.
And be like,
the back off, I got it routine?
I don't know. You hope not.
He wouldn't be the first guy to do it.
I don't think that's in his DNA, but if there ever is somebody, you don't think Mitch Marner is a fiery guy who in the heat of passion is going to say something at some point?
Mm-hmm.
He's a confident guy. I'm not throwing shade on them.
No.
I'm saying.
And Lowry's an emotional guy who he does wear his emotions on his sleeve a lot. Like when he plays, that's why he gets into it with refs. He'll get teed up more often than not, or more often than the average player, because he really gets invested in the product. He gets invested in the wins and the losses. Mm-hmm. You can tell how the team is playing generally based on the way Kyle Lowry is showing his demeanor.
Right.
Like DeMar is very different. DeMar is a fiery guy. They're both fiery guys, but they show it in different ways. And I'm willing to chalk it up to some frustration last night. I also think there's some truth in what Lowry said, or what he perceives to be truth,
right,
that maybe the coach isn't pulling the strings the way he should be, or some of the players, or maybe putting some pressure on Masai Ujiri to go out there and make a move and maybe mix it up a little bit. But when you blow a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter against a mediocre team at home, I'm sure off the record you get a lot of guys in that room last night saying, what the hell was that? Like, someone's got to take it on the chin. Kyle just happened to say it on the record in front of Mike's. He tried to scale it back today. But, I mean, you guys have been in the room after big losses.
Yeah.
It's the mics are there 5 minutes after the game. What happened? And sometimes guys just freak out.
And Robin Lehner had some comments last night about his group, but I didn't think they were that big of a deal.
I don't think he's got enough pedigree, though, quite frankly.
But you
like Kyle Lowry is a lot different than Robin Lehner.
My point, you asked me when Austin Matthews. He's going to be the captain next year. So every day he's going to be speaking about his group.
Well, that's an interesting question. If you're the captain, does that mean day one you have the right to say what's on your mind? Like if he's got the C on his jersey, can you continue to say, hey, you've only played 82 games. What do you know? Or is it his room? Are you saying
it's
your room?
If he's got the C, it's your room, but it depends what you want to deal with. You want to cause a you-know-what storm, then more questions come your way from everybody. And you just tend to stay away from it.
Yeah, that's...
Well, I'm not suggesting... I don't get the impression like Austin Matthews is interested in any drama or any controversy.
No.
He is...
His go-to is going to be, we got to play harder, we got to play better, and he's going to be a second kind of message from the coach.
He's not wired
that way. He's relaying the message from Babcock.
I mean, I don't remember Matt's getting that fiery. Like, I'm sure there were times. He was the captain for a long time. I'm sure there were times where he... didn't have blow-ups, but said more than you would expect him to say. I mean, if Matthews is going to be the captain for 10 years, at some point he's going to say something interesting, right? Or something that you could lean towards being maybe controversial or critical of someone within the organization. At some point, it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And McDavid will do the same thing. McDavid's, he doesn't scream Mr. Personality. He doesn't scream like a guy that wants drama. But at some point, he's going to say something.
But if McDavid wanted to right now, he could say pretty much whatever he wanted. Could he not?
He's the man. He's the captain.
Now, McDavid's on a different level than Matthews just as a player right now. McDavid's pushing for the best player on the planet. So he can pretty much do what he wants in that light, but I don't think he would ever do
that. In terms
of
their importance to their respective teams, they're very similar.
Right.
You're never going to get that from a hockey guy. How many times in the last 10 years or 20 or of all of hockey have you heard a guy come out and say, we need to get help here. LeBron, we need an effing playmaker. When do you hear that?
Well, we just mentioned Brett Hall. Now, he's clearly an outlier, but he would sit on the bench.
On the back of the bus with six beers and be like, get me this. But did you ever hear it in the press?
I don't think I ever heard it like...
The most outspoken hockey player would never come out in the media and say that. That is part of what you talk about as being the hockey culture where those things aren't said.
But maybe we're... In a new era.
We
could
are?
Be in a new
with
era.
Lou and Babs and Shanny?
Well, not necessarily here.
Okay, who's
But who's the
say?
Most powerful guy in the organization?
Brendan Shanahan.
I would lean towards Auston Matthews.
Oh, you're...
I would.
Yeah, okay.
It's close. How do you think ownership would deal with that? Like, hypothetically speaking. You're right. Shanahan holds... He's the president. He runs the operation. But if, hypothetically...
Yeah, this is all hypothetical.
Somehow it got to the owners. Hey, we got to pick one or the other here. Who do you think the owners would pick? I think they'd pick Matthews.
So if Shanny found out that Auston Matthews was a bad actor or some, and they went
for whatever purpose,
he went to ownership and said, "We got to get this guy out of here." They'd say, "Shanny, you get out of here."
I think they might.
You, Brian Hayes, need to get the hell out.
I think they might. Mark Denis from Montreal later in the afternoon. This is Overdrive on the TSN Go app. Listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Maple Leaf lineup player of the day. On Friday, call with the names of all five players, and you can win a pair of lower bowl seats to see the Leafs take on the Habs. Saturday, February 25th, down at the ACC. Theme this week is... Players who were on the Leafs roster the last time the Leafs actually beat Montreal, which was on January 18th, 2014. Today's Maple Leaf lineup player of the day is Leaf great, Leaf legend, Mason Raymond. Mason Raymond. 1 year, and then see you later. We barely knew you.
You got good value out of him.
Actually, it wasn't bad. It was a PTO, right?
Yep.
So. Then he went, cash me outside.
How about that?
Yeah. How about that, Brian Burke?
Yeah, Burkey got hit with that one. That was not a good signing. It was like 3.5 a year over 3 years,
might
I think.
Might have been 3 over 3.
Yeah, I think it was
cash three. Me outside.
How about that?
He's gone.
How about that?
She returned to Dr. Phil. Did you see that?
Because why? She's like a celebrity now?
Yeah. Now she claims that she made Dr. Phil. You got to see the video. Phil.
Who are you talking about?
The 13-year-old girl. I'm sure you've seen the Cash Me Outside. How about that? You haven't seen this girl?
No.
You've definitely seen her.
She was talking to somebody on
Dr. Phil,
how can you explain
man?
This to me?
It's all over every website.
I haven't watched Dr. Phil.
It's not about watching live. You think I have? It's all over Instagram. It's all over Facebook, Twitter. Just type in Cash Me Outside. How about that?
Okay, I'm going to do it right now.
Like, if she doesn't make that into a merchandise, or somebody's already probably...
You have to, right? That's got to be a shirt. Like, it has to be. Anyway. All right, we'll get to the grit grinder later in the afternoon.
We're not doing the grinder now?
No, we started talking
Fire
about Cash Me Outside.
We can do the grinder.
We're on TV, so we got to get off on time.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cash Me Outside. How about that? This is Overdrive, TSN 1050.